We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Michael, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Molly?
Oh, I was doing great till Arizona lost, and that was my finalist. I mean, that was it. That basically my bracket, my championship team died. So that was the end of that. And I was just stunned. I could not believe Clemson. And they played a great game, and they came out really strong, took a big lead, and then they held on, and they held on and held on, and I kept thinking Arizona was coming back, but unfortunately they didn't, and Clemson gets through, and now it's Clemson, Alabama. Isn't that unbelievable? One of those teams will be a Final Four team.
Well, if you remember, maybe I didn't say this on our air, I'm not sure, but I called that region the region of the unreliables. Mm. And the problem that I had in selecting a team out of that region was that you had to select somebody who was wholly unreliable. And we have two of them in the final. There was no way around it. Every single team down to about Clemson on the seed list in the West region was a team that showed the capacity to lose to almost anyone. And that's not a good thing to have when you're trying to win the NCAA championship. So you had to pick somebody out of that region. But did you really pick him to beat UConn? I mean,
well, I picked Illinois to beat UConn.
Yeah,
that game is alive. Listen, UConn is like the greatest team ever assembled, and they are unbelievable, and they're winning by 30-something points. I just thought everybody on God's earth was going to pick UConn, and it's hard to double down. I mean, I misread it.
He made
an error.
He may or may not be wearing orange today, Mike.
I made an mistake.
You know, hey, it still could turn out. I wrote about that last night for this morning. The Illini are a threat to UConn because they play differently, and differently is good this time of year. You saw it in the Arizona game when Brad Brownell threw a zone out, a 1-2-2 zone, and Arizona didn't even try to attack it. They just said, "Oh, I'm open." Boom. Then clank. And then they did that 25 times. I think they were 3 of 28 or something like that. When you're different, it can be an absolute advantage this time of year. And the fact that the Illini operate with Marcus Domask playing with his back to the basket on the perimeter isn't something you see every day. It is if you're in the Big Ten. You saw it every day that you turned on BTN, every day you turned on FS1 or whatever, or Fox. You saw it all the time. But when you're in another conference, you don't. And that's one thing, that in their size and Terrence Shannon and the fact that they showed last night that they can defend when they're committed. Those are all assets that they can take into the UConn game and believe they have a chance.
You said it would be legendary if they could beat UConn. That would be how big of a deal it would be, because Connecticut is winning the last 9 games in the tournament at a rate, average margin of victory, 23 points in those games. And the last time that's happened, I think Florida was the back-to-back champion. So I guess the easy question is, like, well, how would you do something different? Would you change anything if you're Brad Underwood? Would you give them something different if they are trying to adjust to – then you adjust to their adjustment. I don't know if it will come down to coaching, Mike, but I think if you had to look at one key Saturday, what would it be?
Well, you know, it's funny because I thought coming into this game, the number one key was to make sure that you didn't turn over the basketball coming into the Iowa State game, didn't turn over the basketball at an exorbitant rate, because that's the one thing, because Marcus is not a true point guard. Could they take the ball off you as you advanced it? And ultimately, they really didn't, except for maybe when Dane Danger decided to do that little spin move in the middle of the floor. For the most part, they transported the ball well from the backcourt to the frontcourt, and that was good. So I think in this game, like I said, the differences are built into who you are. The fact that Coleman Hawkins can play at the top of the key and direct offense from out there and put it on the floor and maybe go by a Donovan Clingan the terrific 7-foot center that UConn has. That's something that is different. Marcus and that ability to basically be a post-up point guard. He gets his back to the basket, and they can run. Brad did a really nice job of designing a lot of different sets out of that particular look, and I wondered last night, would they be able to get to that look? And for the most part, they did. They took it away on the left wing where Marcus prefers to operate, but then he did it on the right and got a lot done. So I thought that Brad did a terrific job of adjusting in that game. And then one of the things that I've spoken about a lot on BTN is that Brad isn't one of those guys who says, this is what we do, and this is what we do, and this is what we're going to do until we can't do it anymore. He says, this is working. Let's do that. And last night in the game when Terrence Shannon had the four fouls, it was obviously crunch time and the game was getting close. And he could have said, nope, I don't put him back in until we're after the 4-minute timeout, because that's what I always do. And that's not what he did. He said, we got to win this game and we got to trust Terrence to get us there.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that was great stuff. UConn, they look so formidable. I know that they haven't, played the best schedule. Obviously, they had a 16 seed. They have cut a swath, though, through this tournament to this point. And, I mean, it's one thing to win a game. It's another thing to play the way they're playing. It looks like they are like an unstoppable force. The only hope being, if they're within 5 points, have they experienced that yet? They've been winning, 9-7 straight games, 10-plus points in the tournament. You just wonder if they get in a close game, will that shake them a little bit? Because it doesn't look like it.
Well, but that's what we thought in 91.
Yeah.
If you read my column, I went through this little sequence of teams that beat teams that were considered unbeatable, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's why I said it would be legendary, because I remembered every one of those without having to look them up. I mean, those memories. Indiana losing in 75 when they were undefeated to Kentucky when Scott May was hurt, and Vegas in 91 losing to Duke. And Duke losing in 2002 after they'd won the championship the year before and brought everybody but Shane Battier back, and losing to Indiana, not a great Indiana team. And those things just happen in this tournament sometimes. And this is a much better Illinois team than the Indiana team that took down that Duke team. Now, I think this is probably a better UConn team than Duke was that year, but it's all possible. That's what they have to go into the game believing, that it's all possible. And it's not going to be easy. I mean, UConn has Stephon Castle, who's playing at a really elite level, but then so is Terrence Shannon, probably even more elite. And they have Donovan Klingon, who's, as I mentioned, big and mobile. Well, he's got to keep up in the base lineup. He's got to keep up with Coleman. So there are different things that they can do that are different than what UConn has faced all year. And I'll tell you this. I mean, one of the things you noticed right away was Illinois saying, hey, we played against that Cam Spencer guy last year when he was at Rutgers. He didn't all of a sudden turn into Jerry West. He's a really good player, but we know what we're facing with him.
Exactly. So, Mike, when you look at tonight's games and you look at this weekend, what poses the greatest challenge for Purdue in the Midwest? And do you feel like Marquette is good enough to get through in the South?
Oh, I definitely think Marquette is good enough. They'll probably have to defend at a higher level than they did on Saturday when I saw them here in Indy. But they're definitely good enough. It's a challenge for Marquette to face DJ Burns tonight, the big wide-bodied low-post guy for NC State. He's done a really great job in this tournament and the ACC tournament to get NC State here. So that's a challenge for them. But they're a better basketball team than NC State, and they should be able to get through it. And then Houston, Duke. Duke is a very talented team, but not overwhelming physically. And Houston is a overwhelming physically team, but not a very talented team in some ways. They don't have those high-level NBA guys that you usually expect to have on a team that's so dominant. So I think Marquette can survive it. I'm not sure that's what happens, because everybody at that level has a chance to win, but I do like what Marquette is right now with Tyler Kolek playing at the level that he did over the weekend in Indy. And for Purdue, I think that for me, it's always two things with them. One is, do they get a fair whistle? And they have been in this tournament. They did during the Big Ten season. They didn't in their two eliminations over the previous 2 years. I suspect they probably will, because they're not facing the mid-majors now that are smaller and overmatched physically and just hung on, and the ref kind of felt bad for them or whatever it was. And so I think that's part of it. And then the second part of it is just themselves, making sure that they play their best basketball. And that means getting the ball to Edie in dangerous positions. That means Edie making free throws when he is fouled. And it means somebody has, it helps to have two or more, but somebody's got to make shots, whether it's Fletcher Lawyer, whether it's Lance Jones, whether it's somebody off the bench, somebody, at least one player has to be making shots.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
I think that the Zags are not the team they've been before. They're a good team. I don't know that they're not done, but Purdue against... I think the Tennessee-Creighton game could be the best game of this round. And I think the winner of that game will give Purdue a scare, if not to do well there.
Yeah, I think I've said all along that the Sweet 16 game I'm most interested in is that one, because it's two teams that I believe have the goods to win the national championship. And I didn't think there was any other game in the Sweet 16 round that had two. Some that had one, obviously. But no one else had two, and that's why that game to me tonight is the one that's most exciting.
So Clemson, Alabama sounds like a bowl game, Mike, and yet it will determine who goes to the Final Four. How surprised are you, and what's the secret for both teams?
Well, I'm stunned, honestly. I always thought Clemson could be a good team, but they never seemed to believe it. They were only 11-9 in a fairly middling ACC. They should have had a much better record than that, and they really caused a lot of us to lose faith in them. They could have been a top three seed and wound up with a six because they kept falling to teams that weren't significant. They lost by 21 in the ACC tournament to just an okay Boston College team. It's hard to understand what it was that wasn't happening for them in the regular season, because like when they had their visit to Carolina, that was such an important game for them. They showed when they had Pitt come into their building, and Pitt needed the win to maybe get a shot to be here. Then Clemson showed, but there were so many nights when they didn't. So I'm stunned by that. Alabama, I'm not as much. Like I said, somebody, one of the unreliables, had to win, and I thought Carolina would beat them. I thought that they would that outlast them offensively. I did not think that Hubert Davis made good decisions in that game. I thought playing big against Alabama didn't really add up to me. Having the three bigs out on the floor at the end of the game last several minutes just didn't make any sense to me. And I don't think they defended well out of that. And offensively, they made some significant mistakes. So Alabama took advantage of that. They are a fantastic offensive basketball team. Mark Sears, who transferred in from Ohio, became an All-American guard. And when people complain about the transfer portal, what they're not realizing is that people like Sears got opportunities to do what he's doing at a higher level that he might never have gotten before. Right. Or Dalton Connect at Tennessee. That's two of the top 10 players in the country. And they would not have been on this stage, either at the schools they're at and the leagues they're at, getting the television attention they get, or here this deep into the NCAA tournament, if they hadn't gotten the opportunity to transfer to bigger schools.
Yeah, I think that is a very interesting element of it, but I do agree with the people who have said that the portal needs to be put on hold while the season is ending here. Let's watch the end of the tournament and get back to the portal, because there's so much action going on and there's so many teams that have to be aware of it and recruit it, and it just feels – it just feels wrong. It feels like you have an NFL free agency during the Super Bowl.
Well, they have the ability to constrain that in the NFL because they have a collective bargaining agreement.
Yes.
Unless and until we get that in college, I think there'll be more freedom for the athlete than some are comfortable with, especially the coaches. But, you know, there were four coaches that changed jobs within 24 hours of losing their final NCAA tournament game. You can blame that on the transfer portal. Some have in my mentions. But the fact that they were that ready to move on suggests to me that maybe what's good for the goose might apply here.
That's a really interesting point, Mike. I do think that – there are recruiting moratoriums, though, right? There are dead periods where they're typically respected, and that can be enforced by the NCAA. And that's what I wonder if, you know, Gonzaga could lose tonight but still feel like it's a good week because they got a transfer from Pepperdine, I believe, in the transfer portal. So I wonder if there is any momentum. If it is, the coaches do change jobs. That's something you can never get past. But player empowerment, should it include – if you're taking 3 weeks away from their ability to transfer, is that really the end of the world?
Well, I think it's the fact that, think about where it ends up. I mean, you're almost at the end of your semester by the time you get to the Final Four, or by the time we get to Monday night. You're almost at the end of semesters in a lot of schools. So I do understand maybe why that's the case, why you have to give them some time to make these decisions, to find out what's out there, or even just to make the decision of whether to enter the portal in the first place. I think that's why they do it, because it's such a compact time period. You can do it a little differently in football because semesters end, and then you have the chance to make the decision in that month when prior to bowl games. I think that I see a little bit of both there, but I'm not sure what the harm is, to be honest with you. Do coaches have to be aware of it? Yeah, but Brad's not worried about that right now. I mean, he's got assistant coaches, and even more so, they've got staff members. So most of the schools now have directors of recruiting that can deal with that. And then if something pops up and somebody's interested, then, you know, Brad can take 3 minutes or whatever and make a phone call and find out whether that player in particular might really be seriously interested in becoming the next Terrence Shannon.
Great stuff, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
really
Mike.
A lot of great information. Can't wait.
Thanks, guys.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.